Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world, because there's many, many toxic chemicals around out there, and they're in the food we eat, the water we drink, the air we breathe, in our homes, in our schools, in our workplaces, in our bodies, but there are also many things that we can do to make our homes safe, to make our schools and offices safe, to make our bodies not have toxic chemicals in them. And that's what this show is about. Here on the show, I interview people who are doing things to make the world a less toxic place and making alternatives available to you so that you can do that in your own life too. Today is Wednesday, January 29th, 2014, and I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, where it's been raining and getting colder, and but it's a nice winter day here. And today we're going to talk about gardening, even though it's the middle of winter. Winter is the time to plan and learn about how to grow your own food. There's a lot to know, and that there are certainly things that we can do to be planning about what we're going to start doing in the spring, whenever that spring comes, wherever you are. Here in Florida, where I am, we're starting to plant our gardens. In fact, we've been planting our gardens because winter is the best time to grow food here in Florida when it isn't scorchingly hot. But I know that that's not the same in other parts of the country, in other parts of the world. So today we're going to talk about growing your own food in your own backyard, especially if you have a very small space and need to grow in containers. My guest today is Jay McFall. She's the owner of Organic Living for All, which happens to be my local nursery where I buy my organic plants and soil amendments. And she gives a lot of workshops on different topics on Saturdays, and she takes tours of her gardens, and she serves wonderful organic iced tea made out of herbs that she grows there in her nursery. And she's just very, very knowledgeable and has put together all the information about why we should be growing our own food, and is making it really practical for those of us here in this place, because gardening is a very, very, very local thing. Hi, Jay. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, hi, Deborah. Thank you for having me.
Now, you've been on before. Excuse me. You've been on before. So we've heard your story, but tell it again, because it's been months, and I'm sure that some people are hearing this for the first time. How did you get interested in gardening?
Well, I actually grew up on an organic farm in Michigan where we grew all our own food, meats, fruits, vegetables. We canned, we baked, and so we ate home-cooked, homegrown, delicious foods. And so I've been a gardener for a long, long time. And one of the things that I noticed in the 70s and 80s, people were buying more processed foods, and they were not cooking as much. And so I really became concerned, especially because I saw my aunt becoming obese and diabetic, and I saw family members getting sick. And so my passion was then, and still is, to help people live better, healthier, and happier lives.
So what was it like? Tell us what it was like for you to be eating food, like harvested, and then you prepare it. I think that most people don't even have the idea of what that is, that maybe they saw it in a movie or something. But you had, like, I never had that experience of growing up on a farm. I was raised on fast food and cans and all those kinds of things. So just give us an idea of what's that like, because I think that that is the ideal for each of us to, even though we can't all live on farms, the ideal is to be able to have food that's grown in our own backyards or a community garden, and then be able to prepare those things, know how to prepare them, and enjoy that food.
Yeah, it was wonderful because we had such a large garden. It was probably a full acre. And for dinner, I would just go out and pick whatever was available, you know, green beans, tomatoes, peppers, you know, we'd just go out, pick it, and it was really cute because we had a dog whose name was Boo. He was a German Shepherd. He'd go out and eat tomatoes right off the vine. So all of us were just eating this fresh food, and, you know, we'd bring it in, and we'd make our dinner, and so, you you know, the potatoes were like fresh, the beans, you know, even the meat, because we grew our own meat. We'd just open the freezer, take out whatever meat we wanted. In the winter, we would go to the pantry and take out whatever canned we wanted. Or we also had two freezers, actually, one for meat and one for fruit and vegetables. So in the winter, we could still have, they would be frozen, but they would still be, you know, fairly right. fresh from the garden, because we would can them and freeze them immediately.
Yeah, and when you say can, you're not talking about a metal can. You're talking about canning like in glass jars, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, the old-fashioned way that people used to can.
The old-fashioned way, we made jams and jellies and pickles and tomato sauce, you name it. You know, we did it. My dad even made some wines that were really potent.
But I just want to comment that this is actually the way people used to live prior
yes.
to supermarkets. I mean, this was the standard, that everybody had their garden, everybody canned, everybody knew how to do this. And it's like, how many people, I remember, like, I grew up in California and I was always really interested in food. And my father actually taught me how to cook when I was 6 years old. So I've been cooking for very many years, and it was just kind of a natural thing for me. And my grandmother, my mother's mother, lived in the Central Valley of California in Fresno, where there's a lot of agriculture, and she had a big garden too. So when I would go to my grandmother's, we would, my grandfather would pick me up and let me pick peaches out of the tree, and I would, my grandmother would send me out in a basket, with a basket to pick tomatoes off the vine and things like that. So I had that experience as a child. And she was always cooking, and I was always sitting next to her. She had a big stool, and I would sit next to her while, so I could be up at countertop level while she was rolling grape leaves and, you know, washing lettuce and all these things that she was doing. So that there was this constant connection between her, in her life, between the garden and the food preparation. And so I got to see a little bit of that at my grandmother's, but that wasn't the way my family was, because my parents, my mother didn't know how to cook, and my father just knew how to cook foods that were not very healthy. And that's what I grew up on.
Yeah. And so many people have grown up that way, and that we're so far away from the farms that people don't even realize that food comes from the ground. And
I know.
That's why... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, my ex-husband, Larry, who's a very smart, intelligent man, did not know where wheat came from. He didn't know that spaghetti was made from wheat, and he didn't know where wheat came from. And he's an educated person. And
exactly.
I had to show him what wheat looked like, you know, and there's just so many people who really don't know. And I know that there's a lot of programs now for school children where they're growing in things in gardens, just so that children know where the food comes from. And because people really do. I know that I used to think that food came from the supermarket. I really didn't
right.
know that it came from a garden or a farm.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Another thing I want to mention is that about 20, 25 years ago, no more than that now. Wow, 28 years ago, I went and lived out in the forest in California. I had always lived in suburbia or in the city, and I went and lived out in a forest. And in my front yard, I had wild blackberry bushes. And it was so wonderful. I would just take, in the summertime, I would just take my bowl out into the front yard to my wild blackberry bushes and fill it with wild blackberries, ripe, juicy wild blackberries, and then pour cream all over them. And that was, you know, if you've never had food directly from the wild or directly from the ground in your backyard or from an organic farm, it tastes entirely different.
Absolutely it does.
Yeah,
because you're not only getting all those fresh vitamins and stuff, but you're also getting minerals directly from the soil, as well as the microorganisms. People don't realize that.
Well, we're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And today my guest is Jay McFall. She's the owner of Organic Living for All. That's my local organic nursery, but you can visit her online at organiclivingforall.com. We'll be right back to talk more about growing your own food. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Dadd. And my guest today is Jay McFall, owner of Organic Living for All, and she's at organiclivingforall.com. And we're talking about growing our own food in our own backyard, particularly if you only have a small space. We're going to be talking about container and vertical gardening. But first, Jay, let's talk about, I know that you have three specific reasons that you'd like to talk about why it's important to grow your own food. So let's start with pesticides.
Yes, it's very, very important to know what's not in the soil that you're growing your food in so that you're not having the pesticides and the herbicides on your food. Most people that I find aren't really aware that the food in the grocery stores is very toxic, just like the cleaning supplies and the body care products. There are toxins in them. And they can't be washed off, peeled off, or soaked off. So that the most ideal thing to do is to get some good, clean soil and make, you know, if you get some good organic soil, then you know that it's not going to have herbicides and pesticides in it. And then when you're feeding your plants properly, I think that's number two that you were going to talk about.
Well, no, but we could talk about this as part of number one. We're going to talk about pesticides, minerals, and GMOs.
Okay, good. Yeah, so if you, Deborah, you have already posted some things that I've sent you, and you'll tell them how to find those, right?
Right, yes.
Yeah, so I've already sent out the document from 1936 on what the government says about the soil lacking minerals, so you can read that there. But because the minerals are not in the soil.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about each one of these, because actually those three documents aren't up yet. I did post the pictures, but these documents are not up yet. So let's go ahead and talk about them.
Okay. In 1936, the government released a document that says the soil is sadly depleted of minerals and that the food that we're eating coming from that soil is starving us no matter how much we eat, and it can't be remedied until the soil is brought back into proper mineral balance. Now, that enough is scary, but then they go on to say, lacking vitamins, the system can make use of minerals, but lacking minerals, vitamins are useless. So if we're eating food out of soil that has no minerals, the minerals are not going to be in the food, and because every function of our body depends upon having minerals, then our body's not going to be functioning properly. So we really do need to be feeding our plants minerals with all the minerals that should be in the soil, which is 90, 91, 92 minerals, not just
now,
three.
Yeah. Now, how much of supermarket produce is grown on mineralized soil?
I think zero.
I think zero, too. Okay, this is just, like, so incredibly important. I think that this document, this statement that you've just made is so powerful because I just want to say something again. Lacking vitamins, the system can make use of minerals, but lacking minerals, the vitamins are useless. So if we don't have minerals, all the vitamins that are in our food, our body can't use.
Buying vitamins, we're wasting our money. We need to get those minerals into our bodies.
Right. So what about if people take mineral supplements? What's the difference between taking a mineral supplement versus having minerals from your food?
Well, mineral supplements are going to be man-made. So we don't know where those things come from. Now, I've seen this on the internet two or three different times, that if you take cornflakes and you roll them out with a rolling pin in a plastic bag, and then you take a magnet and run it along it, you will find iron attaching to the magnet. Well, that iron is not absorbable. That's not supposed to be putting into our bodies.
So, right. So then what happens when it's when it goes through a plant?
When it goes through the plant actually, let me back up just a little bit. When there's minerals in the soil and microorganisms in the soil, then that those microorganisms actually help the plant take up and utilize the minerals and take them into their cells. So the microorganisms help make it bioavailable to the plant, and then those minerals in the plant are bioavailable for us. We can take them up and use them. If it's a man-made product with different kinds of minerals in it, many of them aren't even bioavailable. If I have talked with people who have seen what comes out of the porta-potties, and most of the time it's filled with all these different vitamin and mineral tablets that people take. They just go right through. They're not even broken down and absorbed.
Well, I think that part of that has to do with our own internal microorganisms, that our guts are not breaking these things down or digesting our foods or things like that. That's a whole different question.
But that certainly is. But people are eating fresh food right out of the garden, you should be getting those microorganisms from the food.
Yes, yes. Okay, so minerals, so we've established that pesticides, you don't want to have toxic pesticides in your food, and there's a lot of pesticides in supermarket foods, so much so that Environmental Working Group puts out a list of which ones, and tell us what some of those, they have a dirty dozen list, that these are the ones that have the most pesticides. Tell us what those are.
Number one is apples. So it used to be that an apple a day would keep the doctor away, but now apples are number one. They have between 47 and 67 toxins on them that can't be washed off, peeled off, or soaked off. And then number two is celery, then peaches, strawberries, domestic blueberries, nectarines, bell peppers, and then they scrunched spinach, kale, and collard greens together, cherries, potatoes, imported grapes, and lettuce. Those are things that we all eat regularly because we love them so much.
Yes, yes. And so we're getting a very good dose of pesticides each time we eat them if we're not eating organic.
Exactly.
We need to go to break again, but we'll be right back. And we'll talk more about how we can get good, mineralized, healthy, wholesome, pure food in our own backyards. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. And my guest today is Jay McFall. We're talking about organic gardening. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Jay McFall from Organic Living for All. That's organiclivingforall.com. She's my local organic nursery where I buy things for my garden. And Jay, let's talk about, we didn't get to talk about GMOs, so let's just talk about that for a minute as another reason why we should be having control over what we grow and what kinds of foods we eat.
Yes, that's very important because so many things are in the laboratory changed into something different that our bodies cannot digest. It's not native to the planet, and so our bodies will actually keep producing more and more acid to try to digest it, which ends up causing candida and many other problems. People who really want to look into that should look up animal studies on GMO animals and really understand how toxic and poison they are and dangerous for us. But the thing is, when you grow your own food, you just want to make sure that the plants and the seeds that you're growing are organic, non-GMO, and or heirloom, if possible. And heirloom just means that these were seeds that are originally from like the 1800s. And so they're safe. They haven't been changed by man. And so it's really important to prepare your soil well and to get these safe plants so that you can eat healthy food and digest it.
I want to ask you a question about seeds and GMO seed versus heirloom seed, because I've done some studying on this myself. And in California, one of the big heroes, because I grew up in California, Northern California, one of the big heroes in Northern California is Luther Burbank. And I've mentioned his name to a number of people, and they have no idea who he is, but I'm sure you know who he is. And what Luther Burbank was famous for was for coming up with new types, new varieties of foods that were more hardy and things like that. And the way he did it was that he did it in a way that I think has been going on for millennia, which is that you look at the plants that are the strongest and producing the best food, and then you save the seeds from those, and the ones that are weak and producing deformed foods, you don't save those seeds. And so you just keep planting them, and you just keep concentrating the strengths. And so that there can be, man can have his hand in guiding the evolution of plants. But what's different about GMO is that it's not just choosing amongst from one plant to the next in order to continue that line. It's actually going in and changing the genetic structure.
Exactly.
And taking things like genes from fish and putting them in tomatoes. This is all highly technological and not something... I mean, when Luther Burbank chose the seeds from one tomato instead of another, he then planted them and allowed nature to then do what nature would do with it. And that is very different from going into a laboratory and saying, we're going to swap out genes here. And then if you're taking that material that has been genetically modified, this mutant material, and you put it inside your own body, what do you think it's going to do to the DNA in your body? I mean, this is just... It's a bad, bad, bad idea.
Okay,
so let's talk about container gardening.
Okay. Especially here in Florida, we use a lot of container gardening because we live on a giant sand dune.
And that's right.
There really isn't any soil. So to amend the soil enough to make it doable is a lot of work. So I do build a lot of raised beds and encourage people to grow in pots. But, you know, you can't grow everything in pots. Like, you can't grow, like, a peach tree or an avocado tree. But you can grow all your vegetables and your herbs and some trees. There are some trees that are very successful, like a Meyer lemon tree or a moringa. Now, many people don't know what moringa is.
Tell us about moringa.
Moringa, if you go on the internet and put miracle tree in, that's what will come up, the moringa tree. It's native to Africa and Asia, and every part of the tree is edible. They claim it will cure everything because it has a deep tap root that goes down and digs up minerals. Every part of the tree is edible. The leaves have a peppery flavor, so they're delicious in salads. You can use them just like you would spinach. You can put them in scrambled eggs, stir fries, any way you would use spinach. You can eat the flowers raw or sauteed. And people claim it tastes like mushrooms. I don't get that, but that's fine. And then it makes seed pods. You can eat the seed pods when they're young, just like you would okra or green beans. If you let it get bigger, you can pop out the beans and cook them. And they do have that peppery kind of horseradishy flavor. Mm-hmm. And I've been told that when they get very big, you can actually dry them or grind them up for flour.
Wow.
And I know a woman who all she specializes in is moringa, and she makes all kinds of products out of it. And she tells us how people who are diabetic, if they start eating the beans from it, it will stabilize the blood sugar and keep it under 100. So it really does have some miraculous properties that help people take control of their health. And it's a simple tree to grow. It can be grown in pots here in Florida. In the north, you just bring it in, and you just keep chopping it back and eating it. And it's a phenomenal phenomenal plant.
See, this is something that anybody who has any outdoor space at all, I mean, you don't have to have a big garden to do this. It's just a plant that grows easily in a pot and can have incredible health benefits. And this is something that more people should know about and more people should be doing.
Exactly. And I know a lot of times people say, I can't grow anything because all I have is a small little patio. You know, if you have 2 feet by 2 feet, you can grow vertical gardens.
Tell us about vertical gardens. I love vertical gardens.
Yeah, they're very cool. There's lots of different ways to grow vertically.
We need to go to break, so you can tell us about it after the break. This is going by so fast. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio, and we're talking about gardening in small spaces organically with Jay McFall, owner of Organic Living for All. That's at organiclivingforall.com. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Jay McFall. She's the owner of Organic Living for All Organic Nursery, and that's at organiclivingforall.com. And Jay, we were about to start talking about vertical gardening. So tell us about that.
Well, we sell a product that you just stack these levels on top of each other. Each level will grow 4 plants. And you can go as high as you want to, and you just put in good, clean, organic soil, the minerals, the microorganisms, and it's phenomenal. You can grow 20, 25 plants in one two-foot by two-foot area. It's quite amazing.
Wait, so to me, when you say stack, I think of boxes, and so I'm having trouble visualizing this. Can you describe it?
Well, it's like 4 circles attached to a middle section.
Oh, I see.
And then you stack them on top of each other so that they're alternating on where they are. So on one level, they'll be north, south, east, and west, and then the next level, they'll be between those.
I see. I think I saw that at your nursery. Thinking of it. Yeah.
And so in this little teeny bit of space, you can grow quite a few plants. And the thing that I always tell people if they're just starting out is to start small. Grow a few herbs that you love. Add some flowers for butterflies. Add some vegetable plants. And there's so many different kinds of materials you can use. You can go out and buy big, huge, expensive pots. I've seen people growing them in 5-gallon pails, 2-liter soda bottles.
I grow things in wash tubs.
Uh-huh. Well, our town just got a new recycle bin. Where we now have the great big bins that you put out by the road.
Yes.
And they're telling people that the old boxes, because they have holes in the bottom, just keep them. Don't try to turn them back in and use them to plant in.
Yeah, you really can plant in anything. And I know, like coming from California, I had a lot of soil. And so I could just go out in my backyard and plant anything and it would grow. And I just have to say, we were talking about how delicious food is. Some of my best food memories are foods, not that I ate in fancy restaurants, but food that I got out of the garden. And I was just thinking about one year I grew potatoes. And I took these little potatoes about the size of golf balls out of the ground, and I was also growing leeks right next to them. And I went inside, and I boiled the potatoes. I steamed them, and then I sautéed the leeks in butter, and I ate those potatoes and leeks, and they were like one of the best things I ever ate. It just came to mind when I was talking about planting. It's just sand, and it's very, very difficult. And so I actually have a lot of beautiful pots that I've collected over the years that I plant in, and I'll have like a pot for parsley. I have a lot of herbs right outside my garden door. I have a plant for parsley. I plant tomatoes in pots and things like that. And you can move them around as you need to and find their ideal spot. Another thing I just wanted to say about vertical gardening is that in addition to things like you've described, you can also just plant, like put a trellis in a pot and be growing up rather than growing sideways. And you can also, I've seen gorgeous pictures of walls of buildings where pots have been attached to all to the walls.
And exactly.
And they're growing it, or planter boxes, you know, just up and down the walls, and you could grow a lot of food just on the sidewall of your house if you have the right amount of sunlight and things like that. And then we have espalier trees. You can grow those all over the side of a house, and it's just a lot of ways to grow in small spaces that people don't even think of.
I really want to encourage people to start. You know, it doesn't matter how big you start or how small.
Just start
growing food, because once you start eating fresh food from your garden with the minerals in it, you'll be shocked at how delicious they taste. And I go out in my yard every day and eat out of it, and I love it because you can't get it fresher, you can't get it more nutritious or more flavorful.
Yeah.
So anybody who wants to get our products, we do ship them. And I recommend that you try them and see the difference in flavor. Now, you've tried them, Deborah. What do you think about them?
Oh, I think that the foods that are grown with your products taste amazingly different. And I found that now Jay has some products that she's put together. It's all organic. And I want you to tell about them after I tell how great it tastes. The thing is that I put these in, I brought all her products and I put them in my raised beds, and it made a huge difference in how the plants grow and how the food tastes, because it has to do with adding minerals, which changes the flavor and improves the flavor of the food. And, well, you go ahead and tell about them.
Okay, well, minerals are actually elements essential for life. They're essential. We can't do without them, and it's for all life. And minerals are also what gives food the flavor. So once you actually build up your soil, you want to add the minerals into the soil, as well as all the families of all the microorganisms that should be in the soil. Then you create this living community where the worms and the insects and the plants and the microorganisms all work together in symbiosis. And you don't get bugs, you don't get diseases, you get nutrient-dense food that tastes phenomenal.
It does. It's phenomenal.
When people come over and I let them taste food out of my garden, they go, I never knew there were so many flavors, and they're so unique and so wonderful, because that's what you get. And then you combine all of these flavors into salads. Remember those wraps I brought to your party last year?
Absolutely. You know what? I need to put those up on my food blog now that I have my food blog started. Because what she did was she took me around her garden, and we picked leaves off of different plants. And I have pictures of all of them. And then they all got wrapped up into this wrap. And I think, what did you put in? It's been a while.
It was the leaf from an edible hibiscus that tastes like lemon.
That was the biggest one, yeah. And it's this beautiful, gorgeous purple leaf. And then in the middle, there was pesto or something. I don't remember exactly. Parmesan cheese.
Yeah, I think some pesto that I made fresh from the garden, as well as other fresh herbs.
And what we did was we just kind of wrapped up, she laid out all these leaves from the largest ones to the smallest one, and then just kind of wrapped it up. And it was so delicious. It was unlike anything that you've ever tasted, because these are all plants that are not sold in the grocery store. And yet they're perfectly edible in our environment, and they're right here growing where we live. And there's just so many things you can do. So many things that you can do. I know in Northern California, there's a very famous restaurant called Chez Panisse. And what Chez Panisse did before they became famous, and I think this is what made them famous, is that instead of going out and going wherever restaurant supply people get their food, they actually were sending out what they called foragers to go out in the community and get food that people were growing in their backyards. And they were talking to farmers and saying, would you grow food in this particular way? And these kinds of different varieties. And the food there was incredible. It's just like something that you've never eaten before, because it's not the same old that you find in the supermarket. And that really changed, eating at Japanese really changed my whole idea of what food could be. And it's just, it's a different experience when you start seeing that not all food needs to come to, from the grocery store.
Exactly.
It's kind of that simple. Your whole food world changes.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I invite people, if they do have questions, to contact me either through organiclivingforall.com. Well, my email address is jai@organiclivingforall.com. Or they can call me. My phone number is on your website. And I would really like to just say that, you know, get started. Try our products. See how amazing it can be. And our business is growing, and we invite you to grow with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate all the work that you're doing, all the work that you're doing for us locally here and helping us know what are the local varieties that will grow here, but also what you're doing globally in establishing easy ways for people to grow their own food. Because I can just see my ideal vision would be for everybody to be growing food in their backyards or on their canopies or wherever it is, because wherever you live, there's a way that you can grow food. And it's a matter of each of us learning what that is, just starting small. So this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, and you can go to toxicfreetalkradio.com and find out more about all the guests that are coming up and all the guests that I've had on in the past. The point of this show really is that I'm interviewing people who are out there in the world making the world less toxic and more toxic free, and doing all these different things. And every day, Monday through Friday at 12 noon Eastern, you can tune in and find out what's going on in the world. All these wonderful things that people are doing from the viewpoint of wanting to be less toxic and wanting to be more healthy. And that's what the show's about. You can have, I have more than 100 shows in the archives that you can listen to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's toxicfreetalkradio.com. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd.